Hey guys, welcome back to No Malarkey. I'm Lauren Chen and this is my co-host Marie Oakes. Sometimes I point to like where you are on my screen, but it's not where you are on other people's screen. So apologies if that just happened. But for anyone who is watching the YouTube premiere, we do every single week go over the previous week's super chat. So if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, leave them in the chat. We'll be getting to them next week's episode. And if you're someone who likes listening to your podcasts, audio only, we are on platforms like Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio. I think essentially anywhere you can get your podcasts, we are there. So definitely feel free to check us out there, follow, give us a rating, however podcasts work. And yeah, we have a lot of malarkey to talk about. As always, we have a recent Canadian election. Apparently Border Patrol are just whipping migrants at the border, or at least that's what the media is saying. Joe Rogan seemingly gives Trump his approval prediction if he were to run again in 2024. Joe Biden, his polling numbers are under the water, and Australia is still totalitarian and locked down to nobody's surprise. All right, so Canadian election. Take it away, Marie. There's a lot to go over.
I think something people are often overlooking when they're talking about this was the election was Trudeau's try to a majority, and the election results are nearly the same as 2019. I mean, I think there was one seat gained by the Liberal, obviously. I don't know how much people think one seat is worth $600+ million to conduct an election, which is, when I heard about that, I was like, why aren't like the other parties running on that? They're just running on, oh my God, he's doing an election during COVID. It's like, oh my God, he's doing an election during COVID. That will cost us over $600 million, an unnecessary election. I thought that would have been a little bit of a stronger talking point, but it wasn't really discussed too much. But I don't think a lot of people know how much these elections cost. And for the results, it's pretty pathetic, I would say, from a Liberal point of view, and really any of the parties' point of view. None of the parties made all too much gains. If anything, it was kind of a loss all around. I know Justin Trudeau Liberals lost a couple of their ministers, and
well, one of the ministers that lost her seat was the one who would refer to the Taliban as our brothers, which I thought was interesting. And I wasn't really paying much attention to that writing specifically, but I could imagine that her opponents would be putting that soundbite just on repeat in their campaign ads.
I don't know how much people know, but this was a record low turnout for an election. I think it was at 59%. That's what Black Lox is saying. And this is, I think he's the first prime minister with less than a third of the popular vote. It was 30-something%. And it's kind of interesting because this is a little different from the US elections, where we time and time again see, you know, Republicans not getting a popular vote. Well, in Canada, the Conservatives do win the popular vote, but they don't win a minority government or a majority government. Right. And the interesting thing about that is I remember when Justin Trudeau was running in 2015, I believe it was, and he was saying he wanted to do proportional representation voting and changing the electoral system in Canada. And it'd be interesting if he had followed through on that promise, because he wouldn't be in power right now.
No, he wouldn't be in power. And I think the PPC would have gained seats, because I mean, this is a problem that exists, in the American system as well. Depending on where your voters are, you could end up with a substantial number of votes, but if you don't get the majority in any single riding, you will have no seats. And I know, a while ago, the same was true for UKIP. Like they did very well if you just look at the raw numbers, but in terms of where their voters were, they were spread out enough where it didn't really amount to anything specifically for them, which is too bad. And I mean, I'm not a fan of the parliamentary system at all. I think you can end up with a minority government where like literally only a third of people wanted that person in power. And I hear Americans say that their system is not democratic all the time. And it's like, if you think that is bad, then you have no idea how bad things can be if you use a parliamentary system. And actually, when I was in college, I remember that with new democracies, it used to be the norm to set up a parliamentary system, but parliamentary systems are actually inherently more unstable, because you can have elections, like you can have them after 2 years, like we just did in Canada, if you have to have a coalition government. So I don't know, I'm pretty black-pilled about really most of these government processes anyway. But yeah, I've heard that because O'Toole lost the election, that a lot of people actually thought he might be able to win, at least get a minority government. Now some conservatives are trying to say that he should resign. Do you think that's going to happen? And actually, I've seen a petition going around too.
I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, you would think it would happen because a lot of other parties, including the conservatives, when they
lose, resign.
Exactly. And even this has happened in liberal governments. If you can't win or get out another government, you know, maybe it's time for a turnover. And sometimes you have to do it three times the charm. But in this instance, I don't think it's going to happen. And I think that petition that's going around is also saying that he was too tough on China and that like hurt him or hindered him. So I thought that was an interesting point because I don't think that's a strong way to say it. You kind of want your political leaders to be tough on China as they should be on most other foreign countries in general. If they're doing things that, you know, directly hurt your country or your citizens, say in the two Michaels cases, you know, you should be tough on China when China is, you know,
imprisoning your people.
Exactly. Yeah. Without, you know, a valid legal reason and not allowing your diplomats into the processes to see what's going on. So yeah, there's issues with that. So I don't know about speaking about that, but I have a feeling that Aaron O'Toole, he's going to try to, you know, not, you know, have to go into a leadership contest, but it might happen. I think it's really 50-50 at this point. There was a lot more steam behind, you know, the Scheer one last time. And it's interesting because a lot of people really dislike Scheer, but when it came to the election, he was a lot more conservative than Aaron O'Toole was in this election. And he got more flack at the end of it. And they said it was because he was too conservative. And I mean, they didn't put out their policies, which I thought was pretty crazy. They waited till like last minute to put out their policies. This time around, I believe it was the conservatives had their platform out first, even before the liberals who called the election. So that was kind of an oddity not to have your platform when you called the election, knowing you were going to call the election. But I think time will only tell us that. I don't think he wants to leave. But, you know, he did not show a very strong front in the conservative. He really isolated a lot of voters. And on the point of PPC you brought up, I was pretty surprised that the PPC didn't do as good as the polls were showing they should have done. And I think, you know, PPC people kind of want to overlook that for reasons I understand. That's the party you're supporting. But
well, I think they ended up tripling the number of votes that they got from their first time participating in the election. So it was 1.something%. This time, I think it was like 5.something%, which, depending on where those voters are, could be enough to get some seats. But again, like if you're all just kind of like everywhere, it's not really going to happen. And, you know, frankly, I support the PPC, but if I were them, next election comes around, I would honestly try to consolidate my campaigning efforts in places where you do have a chance, because there are some ridings where they came in, you know, third or second place. You know, honestly, it does not make much sense for someone like Maxime Bernier to spend time campaigning in Quebec. That it's, you know, go to Alberta, you know, spend time in maybe some areas of BC and Manitoba. Ontario, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. you know, Quebec, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think you make a very valid point on that, is they weren't putting their good candidates in ridings that they could potentially win. And in some ridings, say like the Derek Sloan riding, it was like Derek Sloan going against the PPC. Why wasn't Derek Sloan running under the PPC banner? Yeah. So
that's something really that I've wondered before. And if people aren't familiar with Derek Sloan, he was someone who was up against people like O'Toole or Leslyn Lewin for conservative leadership. And I mean, a lot of people thought that Derek Sloan was actually much more legitimately conservative than someone like Aaron O'Toole. He ended up losing to O'Toole, of course. And so he left the party, but instead of joining PPC, like I think a lot of people assumed he would, kind of doing his own thing. So I actually don't know why he didn't join the PPC. I don't know if like maybe there's bad blood between him and Bernier. Some people have said that Derek Sloan is very, very pro-life, and maybe he wouldn't like the fact that PPC has no official stance on abortion. It's up to the individual candidates, you know, to decide how they feel about it. But I don't know. I think like Sloan and Bernier together, that would be really, really powerful. But Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think when it comes to politics, there's a lot of big egos. And I think that's kind of been the issue within the Conservative Party, probably within the PPC Party, probably in other parties, where you're seeing these type of things where you're like, these people should be working together. Why aren't they? In politics, yeah. A lot of people want to be the main guy, not the side guy. So I think that's where a lot of these issues come to be. And that's kind of how Maxime Bernier's PPC party came to be, was Andrew Scheer didn't, you know, do the big boy thing and work with Maxime Bernier, kind of pushed him to the side. Maxime is kind of sometimes a my way or the highway type of guy, you know, for either good or bad. And sometimes it can be bad, but, you know, that kind of pushed him to then leave the party and start the PPC, where who knows what would have happened if Andrew Scheer had, you know, done the big boy thing and worked with Max and, you know, tried to give him a good position, you know, in his and not in his party, but in his cabinet, and, you know, let him decide what position do you want to be? You came in second. Let's work together. Well, that obviously didn't happen. And unfortunately, we'll never know what could have happened.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think prevented that is that Scheer, let's face it, was like deep in the pockets of Big Dairy. And Maxime Bernier, it's funny, it's not really talked about now, but at the time that he was running for conservative leadership, him being against, you know, the dairy subsidies was a huge thing. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why he didn't get voted in as leader, because there are a bunch of dairy farmers who essentially just joined to vote against him, which is like, there's still a controversy about that. But yeah, there were like memes of Scheer like drinking milk and like all the milk coming down his face. But yeah, and now I know there are a lot of people who are like pretty blackpilled about this election, Canadians, but I think this was always probably going to be the outcome. I mean, maybe there was a slim chance that it could have been a conservative minority, but I mean, even then, who would the conservatives have had to form a coalition with in order to get a government? Would it have just been the liberals? Would it have been the NDP that's even further to the left than liberal? Like, who would it have, you know? So I think this is pretty inevitable. I'm actually like, maybe it's just I'm into accelerationism more, but I think, you know, it's not just the Liberal Party that Canadians who like freedom need to defeat. It's the complacency in too many Canadians. So there are still so many Canadians out there who think all of these lockdown measures, the immigration, whatever, the taxes are all a good thing. And until those people change their mind, it's never going to change. So it's like, good, let's have 450,000 migrants come, you know, let's have like even higher taxes. We're already the most taxed in Quebec on the planet. You know, let's make people see the results of how they vote. And maybe it's going to take things getting worse for people to see that this is not sustainable. It can't continue. Or second possibility that I'm also looking forward to is that Alberta just pieces out, wigs it. So
Lauren, I can't agree with you, because we have seen during this pandemic, the hospital systems basically fall to the whim of COVID in Canada. And that hasn't really propelled Canadians to say, hey, you know, instead of this $600 million election, why aren't the federal government, why aren't you guys sending this money to the provinces to better our healthcare systems? $1 billion
on vaccine passports. Why don't we spend it on the healthcare? Well, no, but that's what until Canadians realize that, like, we can blame the government all we want, but at this point it's Canadians who are voting for them. So we can't really change the government unless we change Canadians' minds. So, I mean, this is kind of the bet they're making for themselves at this point. And it sucks for all the Canadians out there who are having their rights denied, who are being denied medical care because there's just no resources, but there's nothing else to do at this point. Like, we've told like these people the consequences of what's happening. We just need to live through it, I guess. And I think I know a lot of Canadians are already planning to leave or who have already left. Yeah, I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I think time will only tell, and we're going to see what happens in the next coming months, because where I am currently, it's getting kind of cold. I know where you are right now in Quebec, it's like warmer than me, and you're more northern than me.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is kind of making me remember, wow, it's getting cold again. I wonder what's going to happen. You know, we're seeing what's kind of happening in Australia, which we're going to talk about later on in the show. But, you know, a lot of people, they're about to go into spring and summer. They're the opposite of us. So we've kind of seen what it's like winter there. So let's wait and see what happens in Canada, the US, and the rest of, you know, the Western world in the next coming months. But our next story is about the border and some of these border patrol agents on horseback and the Twitter sphere, all these crazy blue check mark people. I'm starting to believe that a blue check mark kind of fries your brain. That's my belief. Now I'm kind of scared if I ever get one, will I become like them? But I keep seeing this comment from these videos of the Border Patrol, you know, riding Western style on horseback, saying they're whipping Haitian migrants. I mean, I guess you guys are all too elitist and you guys have never seen Western style. Yeah, probably that too. So what, ridden a horse or anything.
And it's frustrating because, like, I'm sure you guys have seen the video and the photo, and it's a guy, he's riding a horse and he has the reins in his hand. And there've been multiple angles and you can see that these are reins. People have also posted in response to, journalists saying they're whipping people. They'll post like the Amazon page of like, this is the rein that literally they're using. This is the style. And there've been like no corrections. And it's really interesting because this is just, I think, displayed. Not only have you made a mistake because you didn't do any research, it's just not something you know about, but you've also refused to correct the mistake. I have yet to see any, outlet kind of come clean and say, actually, you know what, this was not accurate. They're not whipping anybody. These are just reins. No, they all seem to be like doubling down and really buying into this lie.
Yeah, where's the fact check? Where's the Facebook fact check on this? You know, on so many videos, you'll get Facebook fact checks on things that are not even necessarily like fact checkable because it's more of like an opinion. So in this instance, this is like complete fake news. And let's roll the clip that they're saying that they're whipping migrants at the border. So what I find so ridiculous about this whole situation right now and how obviously fact checkable this is and ludicrous these type of, you know, narratives they're making on Twitter is right now those border agents are on leave for this, even though it is provable that they were not whipping anyone. Maybe they said some harsh remarks, you know, because they said something along the lines of, this is why your country is SHIT or something like that, because they were throwing the woman in front of the horses because he said you treat women like this.
Yeah.
People are very angry about that, but
I'd be more mad about the person throwing a woman in front of a horse in order to use her as a human shield. Personally, that's what I think is probably worse than Border Patrol actually patrolling the border.
Yeah. So this narrative hasn't even stayed within the Twitter sphere. Kamala Harris actually even had a response to this.
What I saw depicted about those individuals on horseback treating human beings the way they were is horrible. And I fully support what is happening right now, which is a thorough investigation into exactly what is going on there. But human beings should never be treated that way. And I'm deeply troubled about it. The whole point is that we have to understand Haiti. I mean, talk about a country that has just experienced so much tragedy that has been about natural disasters. And we really have to do a lot more to recognize that as a member of the Western Hemisphere, we've got to support some very basic needs that the people of Haiti have.
The moral posturing just drives me crazy. It seems like these people, they're more ready to actually get in front of a camera and make some statement than they are to fact check and look into what is happening. And it's just even the idea that you have these Haitian immigrants now, they're essentially forming shanty towns in parts of like the US border. I mean, that's in and of itself a huge human rights issue. Where are these people's papers? Some of them are tearing them up, like on the border, they've seen like documents torn up. Who's flying them over? I mean, this kind of screams of human trafficking to me because I've seen footage from airports in Haiti of these people waiting for planes, but no one seems to know who's paying for these planes to be chartered. And don't forget that Haiti and America do not share a border. And they're like flying into Mexico. Like, so much of this is just, there needs to be an investigation. People need to be doing their jobs looking into how this crisis even started. But here Kamala Harris is just like in front crying about fake news that isn't even real. It's really, really frustrating.
Well, also what's a frustrating point of this is you haven't really seen someone like Kamala Harris, you know, calling for an investigation of, you know, migrants just swarming into people's property on the border. You know, there's so many cases of, you know, robberies happening at people's farms, you know, migrants taking camp in people's property. So people are getting run out of their own homes because they fear for their safety and they don't want to be in the position where, you know, they have to shoot someone who's trying to intrude their house. So they'd rather just leave their house to avoid the situation altogether. And wasn't it Kamala Harris who was in charge of the border crisis?
Yeah. I mean, she said,
so is she calling for an investigation into her own self?
I don't know. I mean, and that's the thing. What's also frustrating as like someone who's been through the US immigration process is that, you know, right now there are American citizens who are trying to sponsor spouses to come live with them who have to wait like crazy processing times, 8 months or, you know, something. Meanwhile, it seems like it's just open season for people who want to walk through. I mean, if we want to talk about like fairness and justice, this is an affront to everyone who's trying to go in the legal way. I mean, all of these people who are, I mean, seemingly just kind of like being let in, it's really just a slap in the face for the people who wait in line, who pay the fees, who go through these interview processes. Like, right, what they're doing is they're disincentivizing people to do things the right way.
Yeah. And these fees are not, say, 20, 30 bucks. These are thousands of dollars. Yes. And that's even if you don't use a lawyer. If you use a lawyer, you'll be in like 10,000 deep at least.
Yeah.
So I don't really know where we're going to go from here. They said they're going to be deporting people. That has stopped some of the flow, not all, because as we're seeing with some reports, these deportations are not happening in the way they made it seem. They made it seem like everyone or the majority of people would be deported. Well, right now we're seeing a lot of buses being sent to that camp in Del Rio, going to other parts of the US. And then at that point, we don't really know what goes on because we're not having media follow that, because that's kind of too hard for media to follow. And just today, Jen Psaki says that they're going to be banning the use of horses on the border in Del Rio after these incidents. So again, no one's fact checking the story. No one's having the Border Patrol agents back. That's the problem here, is Joe Biden really should be having the back of people within the government. These are his workers, essentially. At the end of the day, these are the people who are on the front lines of the border, dealing with the situation, processing that all these people, putting themselves at risk.
That, like, this is a situation that he created, that he incentivized. I mean, yeah, we had Kamala Harris kind of half-heartedly saying, don't come. But I mean, for the entire campaign, Joe Biden was criticizing Donald Trump for being too harsh on illegal immigration, inhumane, blah, blah, blah. Is it any wonder that now that Trump is out of office and Biden is in office, people think, oh, well, I can just come and they're not going to do anything? Because it's, I mean, really, you are not doing any favors to the people who show up illegally and who aren't going to be able to get papers and, you know, kind of work legitimately. And not only that, but having come through illegally is going to set back their case if they ever want to come in the right way. Like, these people go through a lot of dangerous routes, oftentimes just to get to that border. People die, you know, people are trafficked. This is not something you should be incentivizing, but because of their weak stance, the Biden administration frankly is.
And because the border is such an issue right now, we're seeing all across Texas, sheriff units, police being mobilized to go help the border. So what happens to these places all over Texas? Now they have lower amount of police patrolling their neighborhoods. Now, and then the Texas people are paying, they're footing the bill for the federal government at this point. Right. I mean, I wonder if they're going to be reimbursed or what's going to happen, but Texas right now is put in such a bad situation where they have to do the job of the federal government.
So what he has asked all of us to convey clearly to people who are understandably have questions, are passionate, are concerned as we are about the images that we have seen is one, we feel those images are horrible and horrific. There is an investigation the president certainly supports overseen by the Department of Homeland Security, which he has conveyed will happen quickly. I can also convey to you that the secretary also conveyed to civil rights leaders earlier this morning that we would no longer be using horses in Del Rio. So that is something, a policy change that has been made in response. But separately, all related, it's also important for people to understand what our process and our immigration process is and what the steps are that are taken.
I really, I don't want to be overly partisan and just don't like anybody who is part of the Biden administration. But when it comes to Jen Psaki, there are so many things, even when that reporter asked her, you're going to make employers who have more than 100 employees get vaccinated or have their employees vaccinated, but that doesn't apply to illegal immigrants, right? And she just goes, yes. And it's like, you're so blatant in the fact that you don't care if something is inconsistent. You don't care if it's fake news. And she even earlier said that, it doesn't need to apply to illegal immigrants because they won't be staying here. Seems like a lot of them intend to stay. I disagree that they won't be staying. And it's you are the press secretary. It is her job to say, Border Patrol was not using a whip. They were using reins. This is consistent with our policy. And if someone has a job to clarify the situation to the press, it should be her, but she's just buying into the fake news.
Exactly. And that leads us into our next story where Joe Rogan, he thinks Trump is going to run again and win. I mean, I don't really see where he's wrong, especially with the poll numbers we're seeing lately, which we're going to talk about, but here's Joe Rogan on his show.
But Trump wanted to.
Is he trying again?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to 100% try.
Yeah.
He's probably going to win.
You think so?
How is Joe Biden going to win? How is it possible that he's going to beat anybody? After you've seen him speak, after you've seen the decay and the decline, how is it possible?
It's not very inspiring.
They've done a terrible job. The Democrats f*** royally by making that guy the president.
Do you think that they're going to allow someone else, like Kamala, to run
she
in
would
his
lose
stead?
Just as badly. She's the most hated vice president according to polls. The least liked, I should say, vice president in 50 years.
Yeah, I wasn't very excited about her given her history with wrongful convictions.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to be very careful about what I say here because I don't want the show to get banned. And these are just my own opinions. No one else's. Definitely not Maurice's. It's just me speaking here. I think if Trump does run again, unless some of the election irregularities that were pointed out in 2020 are addressed, I don't think we can expect a different outcome. That is what I will say.
And this also brings us to another question, because this is something we've talked about on our show and a lot of people talk about. Well, if he is going to run again, will he learn from his mistakes or repeat them?
What do you think his election mistakes were? I think he is very bad at choosing people to endorse and to work with him. I think he's surprised for someone who ran The Apprentice. I think he's surprisingly bad at that.
I think he's kind of bad at also, he kind of wants everyone to like him. And that can be at a fault where he starts working with people who he wants to be friends with or to like him. And then he bends over backwards a bit just to appease them a bit, which, that is a marking of a politician to a certain extent. But sometimes he doesn't put his foot down when he's working with some people because obviously they have more political clout than him, or, maybe just the knowledge and experience he doesn't have. So then he, kind of respects them when in cases maybe he shouldn't, but I'm not really sure. I think, it's very hard. This is a human we're talking about. It's sometimes easy to pretend other people are not humans and we don't all make the same mistakes. We're not all bound to make the same mistakes, but I think he's had time at least to determine what those mistakes were, especially for someone like Trump, who is narcissistic, is a bit egotistical.
Might have trouble admitting mistakes.
But he can recognize them and try to grow from them. And I think if he was to run a second time and actually win, it would be a completely different administration in the way of it's so much different when you have had experience doing something rather than the first time. Like, say our first episode, I had never done this before. I'm probably a lot different in like doing the filming than I was in our first few episodes, because once you gain the experience of doing something, you know, you kind of get the swing of things. There's not this learning curve aspect. And I think for someone like him who had never ventured in politics at all, it was a major learning curve, especially when you're dealing with people who pretend to be your friends.
Yes.
And then you've come to realize, wow, they actually totally hate me. Like, think and about that General Milley thing.
Yeah. And there are so many different stories of that. You kind of, I guess, after the fact realize that, yeah, a lot of people within the administration, within the White House, within these different agencies were actively working against Trump. I mean, you know, that's the FBI definitely. And now it seems like it was even like the Pentagon. And if he ever does get back into office, I hope that Trump cleans house. I mean, he ran on Drain the Swamp last time. I think he has a much better understanding of just how deep the swamp is than before. And I mean, I think that needs to be like day one is just like, okay, everybody's fired. Everybody's fired. Day two, let's talk about the big tech situation. Because I think that's also something that he should have. And I got into it with Liam, like about how like he thinks that that should have been Trump's like biggest number one priority. I think that Trump did realize it, but I think a lot of people around him were trying to obfuscate and were not really pushing for it as much. But I hope he now realizes, yeah, this was a big mistake. This essentially cost me the election, having big tech go, I guess, so far into having this power over the electorate that those were two things that I would do if I were Trump and I get in again. But yeah, I mean, it is looking like if he were to run, he would definitely beat Biden. Caveats of election stuff. But yeah, Biden's not popular.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if we're looking at Joe Biden's approval numbers, this is from The Hill. 48% of respondents say they have a positive view of Trump compared to 46% who said they have a favorable opinion of his successor. Therefore, Joe Biden. That's crazy to think right now, this day and age, more people like Orange Man Bad than Joe Biden, the cute guy who licks ice cream, eats ice cream, who's so nice, so cuddly, Uncle Joe.
Yeah. But what's really interesting here is that even though Trump was very polarizing, if you actually look at his approval rating among Republicans, it was always pretty dang stellar. But that's not the case right now with Joe Biden. You have a lot of Democrats who are very upset about Joe Biden for, you know, a variety of different reasons. People don't like how he handled Afghanistan. People don't like that he kind of promised relief with student debt. He's not delivered on that. He's not made any headway for so many of these different progressive causes that he kind of adopted. And so it's like, even within his own party now, Biden is not very well liked.
Yeah, and I'm so confused with, you know, you always hear Democrats have the best strategists, which I'm sure they do, but they seem to not know where to guide this guy. He's never put himself in a good position. If you think about, I think it's been like almost 9 months now since the election, on every single issue, he's been on the back.
9 months.
It's only been 9 months for this to happen, for people to have buyer's remorse, which one of the pollsters said. So going back to this poll, it also says 51% of respondents say Trump was a better president than Biden, while 49% prefer the White House current occupant. The co-director of the Harvest Caps Harris poll survey said, "The mounting issues on all fronts have led to the surprise conclusion that Trump is now seen as good as a president as Biden, suggesting the honeymoon is being replaced now with buyer's remorse." Quote, "Since Trump lost the popular vote by 5 points, Trump getting 51% as a better president is actually an improvement from Election Day." I mean, that is kind of showing, and I can understand why Joe Rogan would be saying, you know, he thinks he would definitely win. There's no doubt about it. And someone like Joe Rogan, he's on all political spectrums. He can be swayed one way or the other, depending on who he talks to.
Really independent, I feel, because he's like pro UBI and all of these different things. But I mean, the left attacks him all the time because he'll talk to anybody. And he is, you know, I guess, pro actual science when it comes to something like COVID. So he's really like
Ooh, everywhere. And yeah. Another interesting thing from this poll, it's not even that Joe Biden is unpopular and Trump is more popular. It's also people within the administrations. There's these differences. So the poll continues saying 55% of those surveyed say that Mike Pence was a better vice president than his successor, current Vice President Harris. Secretary of State Antony Blinken performs even worse, with 63% of respondents saying that his predecessor, Mike Pompeo, was a better Secretary of State. So again, it's not just that they like Trump more. It's that they just overall thought the Trump administration had stronger people within it. And you know, to be honest, I'm surprised about the Mike Pence thing. He had terrible coverage. People really seem to
Mike Electric Pence.
People almost in a way seem to hate Pence more than Trump because, you know, he'd been a politician for so long. He'd been a very successful politician at that. He'd done things people just generally don't like. He was pretty conservative. He was a talk show host at one point on the radio. People really did not like Mike Pence, I remember.
Especially since with the social conservatism too, because, I mean, you had all of these people like Handmaid's Tale and all this stuff when it came to Mike Pence, because he's someone who is very religious, who, you know, he won't even eat dinner with alone with a woman, you know, without his like wife or anything like that. So I think like anyone who didn't like Trump, you definitely will not like Mike Pence. Like there's no way that where you're like, oh yeah, I don't like Trump, but Mike Pence, he's solid. Like no.
Because Trump was a pretty liberal guy. I mean, exactly. He's had a lot of wives. He's married younger. Exactly. He's much more like a Hollywood type, much more likable in that aspect, more liberal in those type of ways. So I was pretty surprised about the Mike Pence aspect, especially the Mike Pompeo aspect too, because he was pretty demonized as well. But I mean, it's kind of showing something. I'm kind of curious to see more and more polls that come out. This is a pretty good one. But you know, what I really want to see is the approval ratings for Kayleigh McEnany versus Jen Psaki. Because
that's like, I may have a little bit of a girl crush on Kayleigh McEnany because she was just so amazing at her job. But it's like, even like that aside, I just like Jen Psaki is just not good. Like, I feel like there are better people that even like among Democrats than Jen Psaki. Why she specifically got that job, I do not understand.
Yeah, and I would even be really curious to see the approval ratings among the press, if they could anonymously poll the press and see who they liked better, because Jen Psaki is pretty just terrible to journalists in the way of her responses are so frustrating. I think there was even something about like a revolt against the Biden administration once they sent in a lot of complaints about they can't ever speak with Joe Biden. Jen Psaki doesn't answer questions. You know, Kayleigh McEnany, she was pretty good. She was always very prepared, answered almost all questions on the spot. I was pretty impressed with her. I couldn't imagine doing her job as well as she does it. But then there's another poll, an Iowa poll, showing that 62% of Iowans disapprove of the job Joe Biden is doing as president. This is from the Des Moines Register. The article says 31% of Iowans approve of how Joe Biden is handling his job, while 62% disapprove and 7% are not sure. Just 4% of Republicans say they approve of his job performance as president, while 95% disapprove. You know, this is not going to be surprising, but among Democrats, that number is largely reversed, with 86% approving and 7% disapproving. But this is where this is the meat of this poll. A majority of political independents disapprove at 62%, while 29% approve. And that's pretty important because, you know, like we said, Joe Rogan, he's more of an independent type, but independents really make or break elections and make or break these type of situations. So if independents do not like you at a 62%, you know, this is just Iowa, but this is major. That is so scary because those are probably the people who voted for Joe Biden at the end of the day.
No, definitely. And the thing is, if you have independents on your side, and if you're able to galvanize your base, people are excited about voting for you, then you have an election, like you win the election. With Joe Biden, it seems like independents don't approve of him and his party is not excited about him. So it's like you are in a very bad position come the next election, come 2024. And the thing is, you know, in 2020, I think a lot of what they were using to run against Trump was, I guess, you know, what ifs. So, I mean, you know, what if like someone had handled COVID differently? You know, maybe that would have been better. What if someone had handled the border differently, maybe more humanely? That would have been better. And all of these different things. Well, now the what ifs have been revealed and it's not better. Like, it's not better. There are so many different things. It's only been 9 months, but you already have the economy. I mean, supply chains are pretty broken. You also have, I mean, the way Biden has handled COVID, he's just implemented things like vaccine passports, essentially for employers with more than 100 people. You have states who are actually suing his administration. That's not good. I mean, gas is expensive, all of these different things where there's no longer like the Democrats can no longer like, oh, if you vote for us, things will be great. You just have to give us a shot. Cause it's like, okay, no, we've seen what happens with this guy. It's not good. But again, this is all a moot point unless some of those election things are sorted out. It's a moot point, but you know, hypothetically speaking.
Well, there was one other point, you know, about these vaccine passports and vaccines at large in this poll that I kind of found to be, you know, interesting. What I wasn't surprised about was that unvaccinated Iowans, 93% disapprove of Joe Biden. But what I did find more interesting was it was 46% of vaccinated Iowans disapprove of Joe Biden and only 50% approve of him, with 4% unsure. So that's the interesting point, because you would think that, you know, we're seeing a lot of times vaccinated people are liking these mandates, liking these type of policies Joe Biden and other people like Justin Trudeau are putting forward. I guess in this case, this may not be exactly the same. And we are starting to see more of the vaccinated community, more of the vaccinated type of people kind of pushing back on these ideas, saying, you know, I think we have enough vaccinated people. We don't need to have these type of policies, or, you know, it still is someone else's choice, especially right. With newer things about, you know, having to have booster shots. Now the FDA saying, or the FDA committee saying, maybe it's not what we should be doing. So I think we might start seeing a sway of some of the vaccinated people, and maybe vaccinated people are different in the US or in Iowa versus places like Canada.
Right. Because the thing with vaccines is that it doesn't necessarily need to be, oh, I have my vaccine, therefore I want vaccine mandates. A lot of people, I have family members who themselves have chosen to get vaccinated, but that doesn't mean that they just want this, I guess, medical segregation going on. So there is a difference. And I very much applaud people who are vaccinated, who realize that even if they will be exempt from all of these restrictions, it still doesn't make it a moral thing to do for other people. I'm very happy to see those numbers. And also, you know, you could even be like pro-vaccine passport and all this stuff, but still not like the way Joe Biden has handled the border or, you know, the economy or so many of these other things. So yeah, there's a lot of things to criticize Joe Biden about. And that's why I still can't believe it's only been 9 months that he's been president. That's crazy.
Well, crazy. To me, it's more shocking. Wow, that happened fast. His administration imploded very, very quickly because there's many more years left. There's three plus years now.
Do you think Joe Biden will remain president throughout his term? Or do you think this is going to be a situation where eventually Kamala Harris steps in?
I have no idea at this point, because I don't see impeachment happening, because I just don't see the appetite. And then for the Democrats, it would look like a political failure, because they would have to vote for impeachment to happen.
He could also step down, though, because I know Tim Pool recently covered a poll where most Americans do think that Biden has some cognitive difficulties, regardless of whether you support what he's done or not, him as a person. I think it's a pretty bipartisan stance to say something's maybe not as sharp as it used to be. That could also be a way for him to step down, and it wouldn't necessarily need to be because of impeachment. And frankly, if I were maybe the Democrats looking like into the midterms, and if Biden's approval ratings are still what they are, I would maybe see Kamala Harris stepping up to be president as a way to sort of reinvigorate the administration. And because, you know, now you can say, oh, well, this is a slightly different direction because we have someone new at the helm. But I don't know.
I would be very surprised if that happens, because all that does is signal weakness. And when you are weak, that's the last thing you would want to do, is signal the weakness within your party. But I do understand your point on that.
It's like, is Joe Biden communicating strength? That's a question. But one, I guess, regime, if we can call it that, it's acting like a regime that is definitely coming from a position of strength, seems to be what's happening in Australia. So we've covered how just completely locked down they are before. And it seems like now Melbourne is claiming the, I guess, title. It's not really a good thing, but yeah, most locked down city in the world, which is not surprising.
Yeah. So the Victorian capital today clocks up 235 days of strict stay at home orders, overtaking the record set by Argentinian capital Buenos Aires. Wow. I didn't know this. I remember at some point it was actually Ontario had it. I guess that's been superseded already by, you know, Argentina, now Australia. So poor Australia. I have a deep love for Australia. I lived there for a point of time. I saw myself potentially moving there in the future and raising my children there. I loved the lifestyle. I loved the people. I loved just like the culture there. It's so similar to the US, but also just so different. And people want to spend money. They're not always trying to save, save, save. They want to live their lives. And when I talk about Australia to people, I'm always just reminded of, I cannot believe this happened to a country like Australia, a country so dependent on tourism, so dependent on so much of their industry about being social. When I lived in Australia, all I remember is all my memories, all the things I did always revolved around social type of things, going to restaurants with people, going to bars, going to music venues, going to the beach, surfing. Everything had a social element to it, where I can't understand a country like Australia being able to be under these type of lockdown measures, like Australians being Australians, because that's a fundamental part of being an Australian is being social. I probably imagine many of the people watching our show, if you've ever, you know, met an Australian, they're very social creatures. You know, that's not to say they all are like that, but it is a part of their culture.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because we've had, I did a video response to, Claire Lehman of Quillette. She is someone who is anti-woke left, but she is on the left. I guess previously I would have classified her as kind of someone who is more classically liberal, but I've seen like quite a number of people who are Australian that I follow on social media surprisingly defend these practices, like defend these lockdowns. And, you know, they'll always say like, well, you know, our COVID rates are so much lower, so it's worth it. It's like, I don't know how you can look at suicide rates, just people's lives being essentially upended, and say that this is worth it or this is justified. And I think we're seeing more and more Australians kind of come to their breaking point. There's footage being shared of protests where Australians are coming to blows with police officers. And it's like, I get it. I mean, you're 235 days stay at home order. That's enough to drive someone insane. You know, talking to people who are in Australia, they've locked down, like, I guess, provincial barriers and all of these things. And it's not justified. And I can't imagine being Australian and being, you're also trapped there. They don't let people who are Australian leave the country. It's Orwellian. I don't know what else to say to that. I was kind of upset that when I made a video responding to Claire Lehman, I had Australians saying, oh no, it's not that bad. And it's like, yes, it is. You might be used to it. You might think it's justified, but it is that bad. Like, that's not up for debate. This is not what happens in a liberal society.
Well, and in Australia, like, it's similar to how Canada was, where the rules were really different all over Australia. So when you have an Australian commenting, they might not live where it's really, really bad. So they're not really understanding the point of view you're actually trying to speak upon, which is Melbourne. They might be in Sydney, and Sydney has been split. Some parts of Sydney are on more draconian lockdowns than other parts of Sydney. But also the interesting thing about what's happening in Melbourne and today, Melbourne has had the highest number of COVID cases than it's ever had at any other point during the pandemic, and they've been under the longest lockdown. So try to tell me now that worked, because it doesn't. And I know everyone's just saying, oh, it's because of the protest. Well, I thought it takes so many days for COVID to develop. So that's a mute point as well. So I don't think these lockdowns really work. I don't think many people in the scientific community are arguing that they do. I think a lot of people are actually arguing otherwise. And I think it's also the WHO's own, you know, they're saying it themselves. I know the UN has also been saying like these lockdowns need to stop because there's been however many more, you know, issues like you discussed, suicide, you know, poverty, people going hungry, people not being able to access stuff. Because you have to think about also there's other countries all over the world that are not as, you know, rich like countries like Australia, Canada, the US, that can't have as ease of access to things, say like countries in Africa. They're still under lockdowns as well in some parts. And not everyone there is having equal access to things like other people in other countries. And, you know, these type of discussions are not being had, but at least, you know, the UN, whatever you think about the UN, you know, they're even saying these are not good. This is putting mm-hmm. people in jeopardy. More people are dying from starvation because of these lockdowns.
Yeah. And I think as we are seeing like more data come out, you see that even places like Israel that has record high vaccination, like they're on like what, third booster, fourth booster now, they are still having spikes in cases. Melbourne's having spikes in cases. So is Montreal at the moment. So I think, you know, we can talk about the, I guess, civil liberties aspect of these lockdowns, but it also might just come down to a question of science. Is this even effective? And I don't think there's really proof that it has been. But yeah, even like, it's funny because I think a lot of people imagine that with the vaccinations, lockdowns would kind of end and these restrictions would be lifted, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Restrictions in a lot of places are just getting more and more severe. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.